You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY. I'm Katie Meyer in for Marty Moss-Cohen. Pennsylvania is facing big budget losses thanks to the coronavirus pandemic. State lawmakers have estimated they'll have to make up several billion dollars over the next couple of years, which would make funding state programs a huge challenge without either tax hikes or major program cuts. That is why some state officials are pitching what they consider to be an alternative: legalizing, regulating, and taxing recreational marijuana. Polling has shown that almost 60% of Pennsylvanians support legal weed, and a pro-legalization consensus has been growing among Democrats, but Republican leaders still aren't on board. Today, we're going to explore all the political, health, and criminal justice implications of legalization. First up, one of the staunchest legal weed supporters in the state, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. Lieutenant Governor, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
All right. So I guess just to get right into it, you became Lieutenant Governor in 2018, about 2 years ago now. But, you know, even before that, when you were the mayor of Braddock, for instance, you were a big legal recreational marijuana supporter. So just briefly, what got you interested in this?
Sure. Well, I was a small town mayor in western Pennsylvania. And when I ran statewide for the Senate in 2015-16, I was the only national candidate that was for full legalization. And I ran on that platform primarily because of the racial implications that cannabis prohibition has generated. No one disputes the facts that enforcement is selective and targeted to the point of 300 to 400 times more people of color and communities of color are punished for using cannabis, even though the underlying usage rates are the same. But then when you add in revenue, when you add in the safety of the underlying product to get this thriving marketplace out of the black market and put it in our state's treasuries, to put it in our farmers' fields, to give veterans — we heard from veterans time and time again on our 67 county tour that they are labeled criminals for consuming a plant that is the one thing in their description helps, quote, make them feel normal again, where they can begin to heal or begin confronting their PTSD. So I don't honestly see a downside. I never did see a downside to eliminating and just making marijuana legal across the board.
And I want to talk — you mentioned this, but I want to talk just about Pennsylvania's history with enforcement of marijuana-related crimes. And I want to just specifically read you some stats about Philly. So here in Philadelphia, we decriminalized marijuana possession in 2014. But between 2015 and 2018, black people, who are 44% of the population in Philly, made up about 76% of arrests and citations for marijuana possession. So this is, again, after decriminalization. But I want to ask you, I mean, can you explain to me how, if marijuana is fully legalized, we can get rid of differences in, you know, enforcement of this stuff? Because, again, like, these are problems that I think are not going to go away.
Well, I mean, it certainly it's an issue that's attached to reforming, you know, fundamental police practices as well, too. But when the substance is as legal and ubiquitous and accessible as, say, tobacco or something of that nature, this idea that it is not an invitation to the criminal justice system. You know, just in the last couple of weeks, 8 Penn State players were charged with marijuana possession. And I want to emphasize, they were in their own residence. They had a knock at the door, I smell marijuana, and now their lives will never be the same as a result of that. So the fact that it's illegality — decriminalization is a step that is an improvement over the current situation, but just legalize it. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make any sense why we just wouldn't legalize a substance that is responsible for exactly 0 known overdose deaths ever.
Yeah. And I want to ask, too, I mean, in any bill, for instance, that would legalize marijuana in Pennsylvania, are there specific criminal justice components that you personally see as sort of non-negotiables? For instance, you know, what happens to people with marijuana related charges on their records? Yeah. What happens to people still incarcerated for marijuana related crimes?
Sure. I don't know if some folks noticed this in the news last week. the governor of Colorado issued a blanket pardon. And the way he did it was very specific. These three statutes was the pardon was applicable. And I immediately asked our general counsel to see if we could institute something similar. Now, we in Pennsylvania, we have the Board of Pardons, and of which I'm the chair. So if we would recommend this kind of blanket pardon for these specific infractions to the governor, I don't know why we couldn't sign that here in Pennsylvania. So all that to say is that I don't want one single conviction on anyone's record for using a plant. You know, it doesn't make any sense. Mm. It's a jobs bill. It's a better parent bill. It's an economic development bill to free people that have had their lives and livelihoods damaged by having a quote unquote criminal record with a drug conviction. It's insane, and it's counterproductive. It's destructive, and it needs to stop. So that would be absolutely one of the non-negotiables, like how we could possibly leave that legacy for those folks on their record. Another, I think, non-negotiable is investing in the very communities that were over and hyper punished for, again, consuming a plant. Mm-hmm. So I think that's some of the universal consensus. And whatever bill eventually passes through Pennsylvania, it won't be perfect, but that's just the nature of way things work in Harrisburg. But freeing people up from the criminality aspect and saying yes to billions of long-term revenue for the state and giving our farmers a cash crop, because you in Philadelphia are uniquely positioned, because New Jersey, I believe the last poll I saw, it's around 75% of voters approve of it. And you're going to have a 15, 20-minute drive to a veritable candy land of legal weed, quote unquote, in New Jersey in the upcoming year. So if this is something Pennsylvania, if I don't know why the GOP doesn't want to proactively address it with the governor and I, but it's something that we won't be able to ignore because of reality crashing in on us.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask about the funding component. One of your big arguments, and I think arguments to Republicans, is that this is going to be a source of revenue. Obviously, right mm-hmm. now is a time when everybody's turning over the couch cushions looking for revenue. Sure. Now, just briefly, I think you've said this could make in its first year about $250 million.
Yeah, I say conservatively. The Auditor General threw out a figure north of half a billion. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, sure. You know, we don't have to argue whether that's realistic or not. Let's just say conservatively $250 million, where you're seeing numbers that are very close to or that in states like Colorado. And we're much larger in terms of population. Mm-hmm. Now, if you roll that across a decade, let's say it's $250 million a year. That's, of course, $2.5 billion every decade. Mm-hmm. And that adds up to real money, especially because it's going to the cartels right now. And why wouldn't we want to take that and invest that in our state instead of having it know God knows where the money ends up? It just doesn't make any sense. And that's one of the main arguments. But there's no argument to keep prohibition in place. That's the thing. Like, I just don't understand what logical ground a prohibitionist, you know, stands on anymore.
Mm-hmm. And so just to follow up on that, though, so to contextualize, the budget hole that we're looking at is maybe up to $4 or $5 billion, depending.
Correct.
Over a couple of
Correct.
Years. Now, just on the revenue estimate, I mean, other states made very big estimates that didn't come to fruition. California was expecting about $1 billion a year, didn't even get a third of that last fiscal year. Massachusetts expected $63 million. They didn't get half of that. Nevada made more than they thought, but they don't think it's stable, so they put it into their rainy day fund, not into their budget. They don't rely on that. So I guess what makes you, and we only have a couple minutes left here, what makes you so confident that this is going to be stable revenue?
Well, I don't think any state, like oh no, we only ended up with $200 million. You know, like this idea, like, well, you know, it's not as many hundreds of millions as we thought. It's insane. Like, it's like legalizing a substance with no known overdoses when we have opioids, when we have tobacco that kills over 400,000 Americans. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, like the revenue that it generates will be substantial, and it'll take a few years for the market to fully develop. But prohibition doesn't make any sense, never made any sense. And Pennsylvania could open up to tens of thousands of unsubsidized jobs, billions in long-term revenue, and a an awakening of social justice that frees people from their criminal record for consuming a plant. Are farmers a cash crop? And purity and a level of freedom that adults can choose to partake in a substance that is otherwise known to be pure, taxed, and is outside the criminal justice system going forward. So, again, I don't understand what the hang-up is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a comment here from Dave, and I'll just read this back to you, but then I do want to elaborate a little bit. He says, to be blunt, do we really want more stoned people in the Commonwealth? Is the tax revenue really worth it? And I will add, I mean, we know, as you mentioned, marijuana is relatively safe compared with, you know, things like opioids. But, you know, there are some well-respected studies that have shown links between, you know, high potency cannabis and psychosis, especially among younger people. So this isn't a totally risk-free proposition here, right? So I think, you respond to those?
Nothing's risk-free. I tweeted out a few days ago that hand sanitizers killed 17 Americans this year. So I'm like, so either we should make hand sanitizer illegal or make weed legal. You know, this idea that anything is risk free. And of course, cannabis has an effect. That's the whole point of using cannabis, is that it has an effect. And let's look at alcohol. You know, like we have, you could walk into a state store right now and buy a bottle of 100 proof or 150 proof alcohol. You know, like this idea that varying degrees of intensity is something completely new and singular to cannabis is disingenuous. We have it with vaping. We have it with alcohol. We have it with all kinds of other things. So as I said, you know, hand sanitizer has poisoned 17 people, and THC has poisoned exactly zero people to death over ever. Mm-hmm. So this idea that, oh, there's going to be more stoned people, I'm like, they're already smoking it. Like, it's already here. All we're saying is let's regulate it. Let's tax it. And I tell you what, we, you know, all across Pennsylvania, I ask young people, what's easier for you to get, a bag of weed or a bottle of whiskey? And they're like, not one of them has ever said whiskey. Mm-hmm. Not one of them.
So we just have a little less than a minute left. Republicans in the legislature have been pretty unamenable to legalizing recreational marijuana, especially right now. Is there a compromise approach, for instance, decriminalization on a state level? How do you see this moving forward?
Well, I think right now we're in difficult times politically. My hope is that we flip the House. And again, a lot more Republicans in private will acknowledge the reality. The thing is like, I know I'm right about legalizing marijuana. It's just a matter of when, not if. And Pennsylvania can be in front of the line, or we can wait till, you know, New Jersey and New York and Maryland and all these other states reap these enormous benefits. And I don't know why we would want to do that.
All right. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, thank you so much. I'm Katie Meyer in for Marty Moss-Cohen, and we will be back after this quick break. You're listening to Radio Time.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Katie Meyer in for Marty Moss-Cohen, and today we are discussing Pennsylvania's prospects for legalizing recreational marijuana. You just heard from Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. Our next guest has been a strong opponent of marijuana legalization. Dan Bartkowiak is the spokesman for the nonprofit Pennsylvania Family Institute. Dan, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much, Katie. Thanks for being here.
No, thank you. And so just to give listeners a sense of your perspective here, the Pennsylvania Family Institute, you advocate for things like religion being unrestricted in schools and the workplace. I think you guys oppose same-sex marriage. So briefly, how would you characterize your work and goals, and how does marijuana fit into this?
Sure. I think ultimately what we've tried to strive for is strengthening families. And when we look at marijuana full legalization, I think there are many risks and harms that are posed to families. And I think often there are just too many misconceptions with marijuana. When you have our governor, you know, Tom Wolf, who says, I'm not sure how anyone would see marijuana as something that is addictive, that really just goes against what we're seeing in today's reality of marijuana. When the CDC says about 1 in 10 marijuana users will become addicted, and if they start at a younger age, it's 1 in 6. You have treatment centers that are seeing adolescents, seeing adults coming in that are having psychotic breaks, that are having implications on the addiction element of marijuana. So I think there's this misconception, especially even from our governor, that would think that this is not addictive, that it's not harmful. And that's just not what we see, especially with the high strength of marijuana that is of today, the potency level, the THC element that creates the high. I mean, you have products that are 60%, 70%, 80% THC, and that's having many of these resulting problems. So today's marijuana is something that I don't want to see commercialized throughout the state and the harms that would occur on families throughout Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say for our listeners, we welcome your questions and comments. You can reach us at radiotimes@whyy.org on email, on Twitter, we're WHYY Radio Times, and you can also call us at 1-888-477-9499. Dan, when you're mentioning addiction, I just want to be very clear. This is not the same kind of addiction that, for instance, opioids cause. That's a very strong physical dependency. We have heard about people becoming, you know, dependent on marijuana. There have been studies being done, but it is, again, just to be very clear, we're not talking about all the same type of addiction. There's many different ways, you know, dependency can look, or, you know, just using it as a matter of habit. Right.
Sure. But and I think it's still recognizing the qualities that marijuana has. I mean, American Addiction Centers, the leading provider of addiction treatment, says marijuana is an addictive drug. It won't be addictive to everybody, but there are those qualities. And I think even when you look at science, it's still trying to understand today's marijuana. I mean, you bring up with the opioid use crisis, there was a study done in 2010, JAMA research that looked at marijuana. And it was touted throughout Pennsylvania saying in legalized states, there was a 25% reduction in opioid use disorder. Well, they updated that state in that study in 2014, and it actually showed the reverse, that in states that legalized, there was a 25% increase in opioid use disorder. So, again, I think there's still an understanding that's needed of what marijuana is doing in legalized states throughout our country, especially because of that rise in potency. We've only seen this increase in potency really as of late, and so to still understand it, I think, is what's needed. So we shouldn't be running into, hey, let's just fully legalize this product. It's something that we cause, again, those harms, the commercialization, the social media aspect of the advertising and the gummy bears and the products that are infused with marijuana. That's not something that should be commercialized, especially with science trying to still understand this drug.
This is a question that I put to the lieutenant governor as well. There are really big racial discrepancies in the enforcement of marijuana-related crimes, and I'll read you a stat. There was a report out this year from the ACLU that found that a black person is more than three times as likely to be arrested for marijuana possession as a white person, even though black and white people use marijuana at similar rates. So it has been argued, and the lieutenant governor would certainly argue, that legalization would resolve that equity issue. Do you see a different way of addressing these inequalities?
Well, I think it's understanding the issue surrounding marijuana. I think there are different elements of it. You have the medical marijuana program that's currently here in Pennsylvania. And so anyone that wants to use marijuana for epilepsy or different elements, I mean, that's something we can talk about with the medical. I think when it comes to the social injustices that many would advocate for, really the decriminalization of marijuana is a conversation that could be had. I mean, you have Colorado that 6 years into legalization, their governor just did some expunging of records. So it wasn't even automatic with full legalization. So I think there are different elements of this conversation that I think often aren't recognized. So I think people, if they understand that there are really these three elements, medical marijuana, decriminalization, and then the full-on really commercialization of marijuana, if you really understand that dichotomy, I think we support for full legalization really goes down. We look at the decriminalization, look at medical. I think that's often what's on people's minds, and they think, oh, we need to fully legalize in order to do those things.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on the line. This is Patrick in Camden. Patrick, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. How are you?
Doing.
Right.
I'm doing well. I've actually had quite the experience of cannabis. I own seven different dispensaries. I own the first legal lounge in Philadelphia. And my question to the gentleman would be, do you think it would be more dangerous for a person to use cannabis or be jailed for cannabis? Which do you think is a more dangerous situation, being locked in a cell for years because they use cannabis or because they use cannabis?
Well, thank you, Patrick, for asking. And I think, again, pointing, you know, when it comes to the imprisonments, I think there's conversations on the decriminalization of marijuana that can be had. But I think a problem that exists and the misconception by many is that marijuana is harmless. I don't see, when you look at National Academies of Sciences, really an independent gold standard of research that highlights there are significant harms, the substantial evidence that shows increases in motor vehicle crashes and lower birth weight and respiratory problems and mental health issues. I mean, there are certainly evidence that exists that shows that there are some significant risks and harms associated with marijuana. So I think this idea that it's harmless, and we have the state representative that's sponsoring a bill in Pennsylvania says that marijuana is harmless. The science and evidence that we're seeing is certainly not the case, that there is significant harms associated with marijuana, and that's often what gets overlooked and glossed over.
Mm. And Dan, I think you and I would probably agree about this. People do use, or at least some people do use, marijuana in Pennsylvania, and there's an argument that by legalizing it, the state would be able to better regulate it and it would become safer. I'm wondering if you could respond to that.
Yeah, well, I think when it comes to that commercialization, I mean, you have big tobacco that's invested billions of dollars into, frankly, getting people addicted to this drug. I mean, you have in legalized states advertisements for animal crackers that are marijuana infused. I mean, animal crackers are good for my kids, but I don't want them having it with marijuana. And so you see these social medias, images that are used to make it really appeal to that young audience. And I think science is really clear. The earlier you start using marijuana, the worse your outcomes are going to be. And the development of the brain that can happen through, you know, age 25 and many of the harms that we're seeing is because of this high strength potency that we see in today's marijuana. So in legalized states, you have it opened for the social medias, the advertising, the billboards, and I don't want to see that, especially with the high potency and the harms that we're seeing to especially a young age.
Mm. We've got a comment from Chris, and I'll just read this to you. He says that you're claiming that we shouldn't allow marijuana because it's addictive. Then we should consider outlawing alcohol and nicotine for the same reason, and sugar. Should we outlaw all of these because they're addictive? He doesn't think you would be arguing for that. Would you be?
Well, again, I think it comes when you look at this high strength of potency. Even those in the medical field would point at the harms that are being caused by the increase in potency. And you have some in the pro-marijuana lobby that would say, oh, it's not increased. It's the same as it was before. And frankly, it's not. The marijuana flower is, you know, 20, 25% THC, and the vaping oils, the flavored vaping oils like strawberry cough and mango can be 60, 70, 80, 90% THC. And that's not going to help, especially in those that are using it at a younger age. So, again, I think we gloss over the health implications, especially when it comes to legalization, which turns into the commercialization, the big tobacco, those that are frankly trying to get people addicted to this drug.
Mm-hmm. And do you see a compromise on this anywhere? I'm wondering, you know, when you're talking to, I think you do talk to lawmakers in Harrisburg about, you know, the whether or not marijuana is going to be legalized recreationally. I think you've heard discussions about decriminalization versus full legalization. You know, in your assessment of Pennsylvania, where do you think the conversation stands right now? And is there any room for compromise on this issue?
Well, I think where the conversation stands right now is we have Governor Wolf and Lieutenant Governor Fetterman, frankly, playing politics with this issue. To think that this is going to help this year with revenues is just an exaggeration.
Do you think it wouldn't bring any revenue into the state?
Well, I think it doesn't calculate any of the costs and the harms that would be associated with it. And certainly for this year, it's not going to help. I mean, we're sitting on $1 billion CARES Act funding. We have thousands of people that are still waiting to hear from unemployment if they're going to receive that. I mean, there's issues this year, families needing help, and marijuana is not something that's going to help right now.
Nope. We may have just lost him here. We've got I think a caller on hold.
To advocate for this
press
conference. I mean, we're just frankly playing politics with this issue, in hopes of really capitalizing on the COVID-19 crisis for hopes of revenue. I mean, we keep pointing at a report from Auditor General DePasquale that says 35% sales tax would generate $600 million in revenue. I mean, 35% sales tax would be welcomed by the black market, and it doesn't calculate any of the added costs and harms that would come with marijuana. So it's just, frankly, for them to emphasize this issue right now in the conversation and not really emphasize the CARES Act funding, the so many other issues that are dealing with families across the state, it's just, frankly, playing politics and not actually wanting to get something done.
Are there any states that have legalized recreational marijuana that you would point to and say that they've done an okay job? I mean, certainly, just to be clear, there are states that have gotten significant revenue from this, you know, whether or not it was as much as they hoped for. Anybody that you would point to as a good example?
Well, I think one example to share, Lieutenant Governor Fetterman had a call with the Lieutenant Governor from Illinois, and Lieutenant Governor Stratton there emphasized that you don't legalize for tax revenue. That's not the conversation. That's not the talking points of our governor here in the state. So you do have in these states, I mean, it was the head of the Colorado marijuana control said you do not legalize for taxation. It's a myth. You see some of the revenues generated by taxes, but there's also the regulation costs, the regulatory costs, healthcare costs, law enforcement costs. I mean, you have to calculate for what is caused by the legalization. And again, what we're hearing is you don't do this for the tax revenue, yet that is exactly the emphasis that the first thing Governor Wolf says at his press conferences is that we have this economic boost that we need and that marijuana is going to do it. Frankly, it's not. It's not going to meet the projections they're saying, and it doesn't calculate any of the costs that would be incurred by the state.
Mm-hmm. And the Lieutenant Governor brought this up, but some of our neighboring states, for instance, New Jersey, New York, they are seriously considering legalization. It looks pretty likely that it's going to pass. And if they do that, a lot of Pennsylvanians wouldn't have to go very far to get legal marijuana, and the state won't get any revenue for it. Is that a concern for you?
Well, I think a concern, you know, look at American Medical Association that says it's a dangerous drug. Look at American Academy of Pediatrics saying legalization would be harmful to children. AAA, you know, talking about the inherent traffic risks. I mean, to just, again, gloss over the health harms for the sake of trying to get some revenue, I think it's just irresponsible. So I think here in Pennsylvania, we should be concerned about Pennsylvania families and how we can keep them healthy and safe, and this is not something that should be considered if we're keeping that a top priority.
And I think just looking at polling on this issue, public opinion, political realities, I think there's no question they've shifted a long way. In 2006, Franklin and Marshall College, which has done a poll on this for a long time, they found that Pennsylvanians, 22% of Pennsylvanians supported legal marijuana. Now, this past year, they did the poll again. It was up to 60% or somewhere around there. How do you parse that? And do you have any reason to think that trend of public opinion won't continue?
Well, I think certainly with polling, I think you have to see how the question's asked. And again, I think if you educate people in understanding what a medical marijuana program covers, what a conversation on decriminalization covers, I think the support for full-on legalization and the commercialization of marijuana drops. And so I think, again, there's this idea, this misconception that marijuana is harmless. Lieutenant Governor Fetterman can say it all he wants, but there are harms. Why would the American Medical Association be opposed? Why is American Academy of Pediatrics opposed? Why is Addiction Treatment Centers opposed? I mean, they're seeing the harms that are caused by marijuana, and especially with that high strength and potency. So it's not something that we should just, hey, let's all of a sudden legalize and, you know, reap the rewards. We're seeing the health concerns and the pause that's needed on full-on legalization. So that's, I certainly hope, the conversation that's being had in Pennsylvania.
Mm. I think we may have a caller on the line. We've got King in Newton Square. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi. Yes, King. What's your comment or question?
Well, I wanted to see if there was a possibility to give the gentleman some pushback on his claim that there's products that are 70, 80, 90% THC when there is not a product market. And also, he seems to, you know, downplay the severity of a certain sector of our population that has been over-policed, even in states where it has been decriminalized or legalized. And people continue to have these lifelong disabilities, let's call them. They have no access to jobs. And those that do want to get into the business have absolutely no entryway because the bar is so high. You need millions of dollars to just get a license and be able to sell a plant that is literally a plant. That's all it is. Mm. No one's saying that there aren't any inherent harms, but to say that there are no medical benefits when you have people with PTSD and you have people that have tried all types of pharmaceuticals and nothing has worked until they've tried marijuana, it's completely unconscionable to ignore all of that and then peddle this lie that there's, you know, products with 90% THC, no such product on the market. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well,
can you respond to that?
Call. And I think, again, we look at what is existing. Certainly in the medical field, if there are ways to try to improve our medical marijuana program, let's have that conversation. It's just false to say that there's not products out there that are 90% THC. I mean, I'll point to doctors that are even for medical marijuana. Dr. Rob Ivker out of Colorado, he points at the concerns of the rise in potency. The flower, what used to be 5%, maybe 10% THC, is now 25, 30% THC. And when you look at the dabbing and the concentrates, it's 2, 3, 4 times that. And it can reach those high potencies. That is what today's market is. There's just no denying it, yet there are those in the pro-marijuana lobby that try to say it's not. I mean, there are chemists being hired by companies to get as much THC out of the flower and the oils as possible to get it in these products and to have the flavored strawberry cough oils to vape. We're seeing a huge rise in vaping among adolescents, and this increase in potency is leading to an increase in problems. So it's just not the reality of saying that there's not these products out there of the high potencies of THC and marijuana. And that's the problems we're having. The medical community, even in the marijuana field, even recognizes that. And many would say we need to, you know, stop many of these high potent drugs. So it's just not the case when you look at the legalization of marijuana, the commercialization of it. I mean, the higher the THC, the more people want it for that high. And that's causing for some a very strong problem with addictions and why so many medical groups are opposed to the legalization.
Dan, thank you so much. We're going to have to leave it there. Dan Bartkowiak with the PA Family Institute. We will be right back. I'm Katie Meyer in for Marty Moscoane. You're listening to Radio Times. I'm
supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Marty Meyer in for Marty Moscoane, and today we are discussing Pennsylvania's prospects for legalizing recreational marijuana. We've already heard from Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, who is for full legalization, and from Dan Bartkowiak with the Pennsylvania Family Institute, who is against it. Now, to offer an expert perspective, here is Mona Zhang. She's the state's cannabis policy reporter for Politico. Mona, hi.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So, first off, I just want to ask you to contextualize where legalization and decriminalization are right now in different states. You know, what's the range of policy that we've seen on this across the country?
Yeah, I mean, right now we have 11 states and D.C. that have legalized adult use marijuana, and we have more than 30 states that have some form of medical marijuana legalization. You know, that really goes up to close to 40 states when you also, you know, count states that have sort of these like limited high CBD medical marijuana products that allow those.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And in your reporting, I want to ask, what are some of the biggest challenges that states have had with legalization? Are there any trends that you've seen?
Yes. Well, I think right now a big challenge that states are dealing with is that you do have these sort of multi-state cannabis companies that are very dominant in multiple states. They have licenses all over the country. And a lot of states are dealing with the issue of, you know, wanting to help small businesses in their own state. But these are companies that sort of like swoop in and snap up licenses. and they have a lot of capital to do that. So that's one of the challenges, which also dovetails with another challenge that I think a lot of policymakers on the state level are dealing with, which is how do you legalize marijuana in a way that can help remedy some of the harms of marijuana enforcement? Mm. A lot of people in the early days of legalization, for example, in Colorado, you know, people who had drug felonies couldn't work in the cannabis industry. And now we're seeing a trend away from that.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And you mentioned companies that are large, that are multi-state. Does that also dig into states' profit margins? I know some states have trouble taxing across state lines, for instance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, cannabis cannot be moved across state lines or taxed across state lines. You know, the profit margins for states, it really, you know, it depends on so many other factors with how, you know, the legalization law is written. But I think the difficult thing for policymakers is how do you balance taxing this drug in a way that helps the state generate tax revenue, but at the same time, you don't want to make it too expensive so that it's not competitive with the illicit market. In California, in some counties, cannabis is taxed at rates upwards of 30%. And that's part of the reason why they still have such a strong illicit market, is because people can go to, you know, and buy these sort of like informal, untaxed, much cheaper cannabis products.
Yeah. And is there any state that you think has found a good balance between taxing it at a level that gets them some revenue and also stamps out some, you know, the illicit market?
Well, I think it depends a lot. I mean, California's problem is that they've had this like ongoing illicit, flourishing illicit market for decades.
Right.
So it really depends on the state and the sort of situation in your state. I think New Jersey is going to vote on a referendum this November. It's widely expected to pass, but if it does pass, it will have the lowest tax rate out of any state for adult use cannabis. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of New Jersey, because that is one of the states, obviously, they've been debating this for a while. They've gotten really close to passing it in the past and haven't quite gotten across the finish line, but it looks pretty likely. I think New York is in kind of a similar position. How many states are sort of on the precipice right now? I know there's also some ballot measures that are coming up.
Yeah, so we have 5 states voting on legalization initiatives in November. You know, New Jersey, Montana, South Dakota, Arizona, they're voting on recreational legalization measures. South Dakota and Mississippi are also voting on medical marijuana legalization measures. It's the first time that both rec and medical have been on the same ballot in mm-hmm. South Dakota's case. And this is actually a lot fewer ballot initiatives we would have seen if the pandemic hadn't derailed some of these efforts in other states.
Mm-hmm. We've got a caller on the line right now. This is Jessica in Palmerton. Are you there, Jessica? Perhaps not. Jessica?
Yeah.
Hi. I don't know if we can hear you. Jessica, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, hi. What's up?
Let me go. I'm trying to hear you better.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead. What's your question?
Hi. I actually have just a comment in regards to the potency being an issue with the legalization of medical marijuana or marijuana being used medicinally. You know, if you go to alcohol, you know, any types of alcohol, there's higher potencies, lower potencies. So to me, I feel like it is not having a trust in the American people or Pennsylvanians or responsible adults to be able to choose a potency that is beneficial for them. As we all know, someone who has been using alcohol for a long time might have a higher tolerance to somebody who's just starting out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they have people in place at dispensaries to assist people in finding what is best for their needs.
Yeah,
I think that we're glazing over a lot of these values of the higher potency medical marijuana. As someone who has chronic pain, fibromyalgia,
yeah.
And a lot of the things that I use medical marijuana for, the higher potency THCs mixed and combined with.
Sure. Jessica, I'm sorry. There's some noise on your line, but I want to cut you off just because it's hard to hear you. But I think we did get your question. So thank you so much for calling in. Mona, I want to put that question to you because we did hear from our previous guest who was against legalization that, you know, there were concerns that high potency could be a possible risk in legalization or full recreational legalization. And so just, you know, in your experience, have states had trouble with, you know, people for just getting too high or people not understanding how potency works in legal marijuana?
Yes, I think you have seen a lot of sort of anecdotal stories, these sort of one-off stories. And someone, I mean, I guess like Maureen Dowd is sort of like an off-sided sure. example of someone who wasn't familiar with how to dose cannabis products and just overdoing it. However, that was like the early days of legalization in Colorado. And after these sorts of incidences, Colorado established these sort of dosage requirements for edibles. So now you can't buy, like, one dose of an edible in Colorado is 10 milligrams. And you see similar dosage requirements in other states for these types of products. So I think, obviously, you know, there is risk with high potency, any sort of drug, whether it's marijuana or, you know, alcohol. But I think the alcohol analogy is a good one to help understand cannabis potency. You know, you could liken cannabis flower to like a beer or a wine, or, you know, with these concentrates, they might be analogous to, you know, spirits. And you don't consume, or generally speaking, people don't consume a pint of whiskey. You know, it's like you consume less of it because it's more potent. And I think the same sort of logic can be applied to cannabis products, but there definitely is a learning curve, especially for consumers who are not familiar with these products, haven't consumed these products regularly in terms of figuring out, you know, what the right dosage is for them.
Sure, sure. And just to do a little fact check, I mean, is there, do you have a sense of the highest THC percentage that is commercially available typically? I know our previous caller said 90% is available. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, with these cannabis concentrates, you can get them, you can like take the THC out of the cannabis flower and concentrate that, you know, pretty close to 100%. So, I mean, these are not products that are generally consumer products. These are products that are used to like infuse other, maybe like edibles or other types of, you know, oils. People generally aren't consuming like 99% pure THC. But yes, those products do exist.
Okay, gotcha. I wanted to ask you too, I know you've done some reporting about this recently. We mentioned all the states that are in the process of legalizing cannabis. But I think the pandemic waylaid some of these efforts. How has that impacted things?
Yeah, well, the pandemic definitely sort of derailed efforts, both like citizen initiatives and also legislative efforts. You know, Governor Cuomo in New York, for example, marijuana legalization was high on his priority list until the pandemic hit, and those efforts got pushed aside for, you know, very good reasons. But I think you are starting to see a lot of state lawmakers look to marijuana legalization as a potential source of revenue because, I mean, state budgets are hurting as a result of this crisis.
Yeah. We've got a question from David. You know, as you know, Pennsylvania does have medical marijuana, and he says he has seen medical marijuana doctors in Pennsylvania lobbying against legalization because possibly it would harm their businesses. Is that something that you've seen? Is that a phenomenon that you know about?
Yeah, it definitely, there are states where this is an example that, I mean, there are states where this has happened where, you know, they have a medical program and then they legalize recreational marijuana and they sort of combine the two programs. And as a result, you know, patients have less access to the kind of products they need. Companies are more incentivized to serve the adult use market because it's more lucrative. So they stop sort of prioritizing the type of products that patients need. I think it just gets down to the nitty gritty details of how you regulate this industry. Are you going to have separate medical and recreational programs? How are they going to be taxed? Are dispensaries going to serve both adult use and medical customers? I mean, there's so many different ways you can regulate this, and how much the medical industry is protected just comes down to the sort of details of how the state approaches regulating.
Yeah, yeah. I want to go to the federal level on this. As we've mentioned, a lot of states have been acting on recreational marijuana. There also was a U.S. House bill that was supposed to get a vote last month. It would have removed federal penalties for use of recreational marijuana. Can you just tell me what happened with that and why the vote didn't come up?
Yeah, so the MORE Act, which, you know, was scheduled for a vote last month, but ultimately was pulled because there were quite a few moderate Democrats that were concerned about bringing up a marijuana vote without having, you know, gotten a coronavirus aid deal. And so I think now House Democrats are planning to hold a vote on the bill after the election. But, you know, it would be historic. Such a bill has never been voted on the House floor of Congress. But it doesn't have any chance in the Republican controlled Senate. You know, the chances of that bill will depend on the outcome of November and what happens with the Senate, I think.
So basically what you're saying is, as long as Republicans control the Senate, you don't see any changes to, for instance, the Schedule I status of marijuana on the federal level?
Yeah, I would say that. I don't think Mitch McConnell would bring up any sort of marijuana reform bill for a vote. I find that highly doubtful.
We've got a bunch of comments. I don't know if we're going to be able to get to all of them, but this is just from Ruth. She says, I keep hearing about the negative impact of smoking or using marijuana when young, and people rightly or wrongly stress over that while proposing to do nothing about the racism and poverty that do a whole lot worse than marijuana to the developing brain. A couple things there, but just to the first part of Ruth's question, and then we can get into the criminal justice aspect. I mean, is there real concern among experts about what use of marijuana would do to young people?
Yes, I think this is one area of cannabis research that is like pretty well established. There's been minimal research on marijuana in this country because of its Schedule I status. However, I think the science is pretty clear that young people consuming marijuana, it is harmful to the developing brain. You know, the data from states that have legalized it are pretty mixed in terms of whether legalization leads to more young people using the drug. I mean, there are some studies that show that teen use rates have decreased after legalization. There are some studies that show that they have increased in certain counties, in Washington, for example. So, you know, the data is a bit murky on that, but it definitely is the case that it can be harmful to the developing brain.
And just on the criminal justice aspect, Ruth is making the case that, you know, any risks to young people using marijuana, that's nothing compared to the risks of people getting tangled in the legal system and the criminal justice system because of use of this relatively common drug. In your experience, have states generally done, I don't want to say a good or bad job, but have states, you know, gotten people out of the criminal justice system, or has this been a lingering issue that they've had to contend with and figure out how to regulate?
Yeah, I think it's been a lingering issue, but there has been a trend in terms of the debate on the state level, and the debate has in recent years shifted to focus on criminal justice reform. So now, you know, you can't really talk about cannabis legalization in a state legislature without talking about expungements, you know, expunging past pot offenses, or, you know, helping people who have struggled as a result of their criminal record into the industry to help, you know, take part in this creation of wealth. Whether such programs are effective in achieving their goals is another matter. I think a lot of, you know, Illinois, Massachusetts, they have these social equity programs that are designed to help people who have, you know, suffered from the war on drugs into the industry. But it may be too early to tell, but there's not a lot of people who have benefited from these programs yet.
Interesting. And is there a timeline for that? I mean, most states have like a sense of how long it'll take for there to be tangible benefits.
Yeah, I think, you know, states have timelines, but the timelines kind of get upended by lawsuits. There have been lawsuits in Massachusetts. There are a couple lawsuits in Illinois right now over the equity program. So that sort of just delays everything.
Yeah. We've got a comment from Bill in Winmore. He says he was an addiction psychiatrist, and he wants to point out that when marijuana was made legal in Colorado, opiate addiction went down. So I think we're going to have to leave that comment there. Well, Mona, thank you so much for all your time today, and thank you for answering all these questions for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Katie.
All right, take care. I want to thank everybody who helped with this episode. Thank you to John Ahrens, our producer, to our engineer, Al Banks. And we also thank you to all of our listeners who called in with comments. I am Katie Meyer, in for Marty Moss-Cohen. And you can listen to this episode as a podcast, if you'd like to, later in the day.